All right, I'm going to get started. My name is Michael Mastrangelo. I work on the WinJS team in Windows, and we created the Windows Library for JavaScript. I'm going to go through the list view and what it takes to create a really beautiful app with the list view control. I want to take a note here and say that earlier this morning there was a list view or list control talk for the XAML controls, and if you're interested in that, you should go try the build website and look up the videos for that. Otherwise, and also, if you want to go back and reference mine, my video will also be on the build website. A little bit about myself. In my spare time, I build a bunch of Windows 8 apps. I've actually submitted a couple to the Windows Store, and I'm super excited about it. It's great and fun to use the platform and the list views. I have a hard time building an app without putting a list view in it, and I get really excited when I find someone that actually has one of my apps already on their start screen, and that's exciting. And so let me tell you first about the list view. The first thing you want to know is lists are everywhere. When you first turn on your computer, there's a list presented to you with the start screen, and most apps, like the store, use a giant list view. This is the same list view control that you get to use in your own apps. It has multi-size, you can pan back and forth, it has grouping, you can integrate it with the semantic zoom control so that users can quickly jump to a section of the group. When you first look at the list view, you might think to yourself, oh, is this just a for loop that's outputting a bunch of divs? But we added a lot more on top of that. We finally tuned it for performance and for memory. So when you pan back and forth, we remove the old elements and add elements so that we keep our memory footprint really small. We have interactivity so that you can tap on an item, and as soon as you put your finger on it, it shrinks down just slightly so that you can have the immediate touch feedback. If you swipe on it to select an item or a bunch of items, we have it stick to your finger, each item. And there's a rich selection API, and there's animations when you add and remove. We provide templates and data sources that power the list view. And so today I'm going to go through three demos. The first one, I'm going to create a list view. We're going to put a template in there, a data source, and some CSS to style it. Then we're going to group these items into the list view groups, and we're going to add a zoomed out view so that users will be able to quickly zoom to any group in their list that they want to. And finally, we're going to talk about interactivity, which is not only selecting items or navigating into items, but also removing items. And it's also about adding interactive elements inside your list view items. And so with that, I'm just going to go straight into my first demo. And so here we are in Visual Studio, and I'm going to just make a new blank application. I'll call it My App. And our blank template gives you a bunch of files. It gives you an HTML file, a JavaScript file, and a CSS file. Right away, I'm just going to add in a title and a list view. And so my title is exactly what you would think if you're an HTML developer. It's a heading tag, and my list is a div with a attribute called data win control. And if you were at the earlier WinJS talks, you'll know exactly what that is. But that is, if you're going to your JavaScript file, you can see by default on your app activation, we call process all, and that iterates through, that does a query selector through your elements, finding those elements with those attributes, and then instantiating them. And so right away, we have a title, and we have a list view control, and I've given it an ID so that I can style it directly, and that I can query it by getElement by ID. And so the list view is going to be pretty boring if it doesn't have any data. So the first thing that you're going to want to do is you're going to want to add some data. And I'm cheating by dragging in code, but that's just so that I don't have lots of typos. And I'm actually going to throw in a lot of data. This is a really large list, and I am putting it off of window. And so I have window.data.people. And so this is a really large list of people. And each person has a country of origin, a Latin name, a localized name, their gender. I gave them a random rating and a background color. And some of them also have a URL to an image flag that you'll see later in the talk. And so That's great that we have an array, but the list view needs a data source. And the list view has actually provided, or WinJS has provided two data sources that you can use when you're building a list view. The first one is probably going to be the most common one. Probably all of your apps that you guys write are going to use this, and this is the binding templates. And let me just show you one right quick. Oops. So the, the first data source that you're going to see is the binding list, not the binding template. I think I got confused there. So to create a binding list, it is an observable array. You can think of it very much like it has the same APIs as an array. It has push, it has pop, it has splice. You can get the length. The only trick is if you're using the square brackets, instead, with the binding list, you're going to use the get at and set at. And so you can see here that all I'm doing is saying new binding list, assigning it to this public people list, and I'm also exposing the data source property off of it. This is the object that implements the APIs that the list view needs to hook up to a data source. And so this binding list is the most common binding list. Probably all of your apps are going to do it. It's in memory. It's really quick. It seems like an observable array. The other data source that WinJS provides is the virtualized data source. And this is for really large lists that have really high latency on your items. And when you're scrolling through a list view, we actually make sure that we're only realizing the items that you're scrolled towards. And so if you're worried about too many network calls and you have a really large list, that's a good data source to go look at. And so now that I have this, I'm just going to make sure that I call it. And so it'll be ready before we call process all. And so now we have a data source, and the list view also needs a template. When you have the list view, each item needs to have some markup so that you can style it. And so we have a thing called an item template for that. And there's two different types of item templates, just like there was two different types of data sources. The first one is called a binding template, and you see it here. And it's going to be the most common type of template that you're going to use throughout your apps. And you can see that you can just design this thing right in HTML, and it uses the WinData control attribute, just like the list view did. And it also uses the WinData bind attribute. If you want more information on the WinData bind attribute, I suggest you look at the earlier WinJS talks, because they went more in depth on how those things work. Essentially, for each item in our list, it's going to take the Latin name property and put it in the text content, a background, and a gender. And so the last thing that we're going to want to do is we're going to want to assign these properties to the list view. And so first, I'm going to assign the item data source to the list view. And we do that with an attribute called data win options. And you can see that our property in the list view is just called item data source. And this object that we define in HTML is passed into the constructor of your controls. And in this case, the list view control. And to assign the item template, we just assign item template equals people template, which is defined right up here. And the last, so now we have a list, and it has data, and it has a template that is going to represent each item. And finally, now that we have all this HTML, we want to style it. And so the list view actually allows you to style a lot of things in it. And I'm going to point out the most common ones. So the first thing that you're probably going to style is the size of the items. And so right here, you can see that I'm sizing my items based on win item. By default, if you didn't do this, it would just use whatever content you have on your first item, and it would assume that that's the size of every item, because we only measure the first item when we're creating a list view. So A bug that people have hit in the past is they would put an image in, and sometimes when they're debugging, the image would load before we measured it, and sometimes it would load afterwards, and you would end up with overlapping items. So it's really good to pick a size for your items and specify it in CSS like this. And you'll note that I'm using the ID selector in my CSS so that I can override default list view styles. And for example, the list view has a default height of 400 pixels, and it has default group separation. And so that's why I do that. The next most common style that you're going to want to apply to your list view items are colors. And so right here, you can see I just did it on a div inside of my item called person data, and I just picked a color. And the other important things here are that I'm just centering the content and positioning it, and also positioning the gender at the bottom. And so now if I run this, you can see that we have a list view. And like I said before, it's by default 400 pixels tall, and this is a really large list. A very common thing that people are going to want to do is they're going to want to have their app, like a lot of apps are very centered on a list view, and they want their users to be able to pan at the top and bottom. They want the list view to grow when they're on larger monitors, or have less rows when there's less space on the monitor. And so I'm going to show you how to do that with some more CSS. So the first thing I'm doing is I'm going to add a background color or a background image to my body. And let me just grab this from my desktop. And I'm going to make sure that the background image is 100% height and width, so it covers the entire app. Then, if you noticed before, the heading was actually pushing down the list view, but I want to be able to pan even towards the top of the app. And so I'm going to take it out of the layout, and I'm going to make it position fixed. And then I'm going to put the list to be 100% height and width. But I don't want the items to overlap the header, and so I'm going to add surface margins, or margins on the wind surface element. And we have on MSDN, there's a full list of all of the class names that we use in list view. You can also use the simulator and just DOM inspect to find out which ones you want to do. But the MSDN documentation lists out different elements and what types of things you're probably going to want to style. And so you can see here, I'm styling 200 pixels at the top to avoid the title. I want to line up my first item exactly with my title, and so I have 120 pixels on the left and on the right, and I'm going to save some space for an app bar at the bottom. And so now when I run this, you can see that we have a couple more rows of items, and now the scroll bar is directly at the bottom of the app. And so that's how you create a list view with an item data source and a template. And so it's really easy to create a list view if you have some data in an array. That we have two different data sources. We have the binding list, and we have the virtualized data source. The binding list is probably what you're going to use. It's the fastest. It's all in memory. The virtualized data source is for really large lists. You really need to be virtualized. To design the markup that's going to represent each item, you're going to use a template. We have two there again. The first one is the binding templates, which I showed you in the demo. And the second one is you can provide a rendering function. And the rendering function is really great if you have complex markup, or if you want to switch in between template A or template B based on which items you have. It's also really great for wrapping third-party templating libraries in case you're really interested in doing that. And then finally, you can add some CSS and you can style the list view. The second demo that I want to get into is we have a really large list. And so a common problem you're going to have is people are going to try to get to like three-fourths of the way through your list, and they're going to have to pan a bunch to get there. And they'll always forget where they are, and they want a quick way to get there. And so that's why we have grouping and we have semantic zoom. And so I'm going to show you how easy it is with the binding list and the list view on how to create these two experiences. Oops. And so the first thing that we're going to want to do is we're going to figure out, well, what do we want to group the data with? And if you remember my data, it was a bunch of people, and we can group them many different ways. They have a country, they have a name, like we could just use the first letter, we could group them by gender. So in this example, I'm just going to group them by country. And so with the binding list, there's a bunch of great APIs that come with the binding list. It makes it really easy to group, filter, and sort your list. And so I'm going to show you how to filter and how to group your list. And sorting is very similar as well. So the first, you can see here that I'm going to call off of the binding list, there's two APIs that are important here. One of them is called create filtered. There's also create sorted. And then the other one that I'm also going to call is create grouped. And the create filtered takes a function in, and that function allows you to filter items away. And so in this example, any item that does not have a flag URL, I'm removing from the list. And this is because I'm going to show a flag URL on my example when we add the semantic zoom out. And I don't want to have any missing images. So that's how I'm dealing with that. And then the other API is create grouped. And this takes in two functions. And the first one tells us what it maps each item to the group. And so given any item, what is the group that it belongs to? And so I'm just using the country. And so that'll give me a unique group, and it'll also put different items together. Another important thing here is if the initial array was out of order and like someone from the first country is later on in the list, it'll automatically sort the array off of, I mean, this grouped projection will be sorted so that the items are grouped, are in order per group. And the other API that you have to provide is the group data function. And the group data function is called for the first item of each group, and it tells the list view, or the binding list, what the data is that represents the group. And sometimes when you're making calls to your APIs, you might actually have two different arrays. You might have an array for your people, and you might have an array for your country, and maybe you just have a pointer. And that, like, and then this function is really easy because all you have to do is index in. I have duplicated the country and the flag and over again on each of my arrays, so that's why I have to create these objects. And then finally, after we have called group and filter, sorry, I should have been aligning those faster. Then I'm going to expose the data. And so just like before when we had the binding list data source, we now have the group data source, and the grouped has groups, which has a data source as well. And so these are the two new data sources that we're going to be dealing with. And then over in our HTML, where we had an item template and an item data source, all we have to do is provide a group heading template and a group data source. So I'm going to do that now. And so once again, just like I had the people template, which was a binding template, I'm going to use another binding template to represent the group headers. And so you can see here on this one, all I'm doing is taking the country's name and I'm putting it as the inner text. And so just like we had the item data source and the item template, we now have a group header template and a group data source. And now if I run this, you can see that now our items are grouped and they have a little template above them. However, our alignment here is now off. And this is because we have a default separation in between our groups of 70 pixels. And so the first group is already set off by 70 pixels. So I'm going to come back in here and switch this 120 down to 50 to subtract 70. And then now if I run it, it will be back lined up with the title. And so now we have groups. And so now our users will be able to figure out where they are in the list. However, they quickly want to be able to jump to any part of the list, so I'm going to add the semantic zoom control. And there's a really good tip I have for you for when you're making a semantic zoom control, and that's that you should actually make sure both the zoomed in view and the zoomed out view work great by themselves independently, and then wrap them together. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to comment out the contact list, which is my zoomed in view, and I am going to add a zoomed out list, which is also a list view. And it also needs to take in an item template and an item data source, just like the original one did. But if you'll notice here, I'm going to right away use the country data source, which was my group data source, for my item data source. So the country data source in the zoomed in view was my country data source. And now in my zoomed out view, the item data source is the same thing. I could have used, for my item template, I could have used the same country header template, but I told you before I want to add some flags, and so I'm going to drag in a prettier template in here, and this one shows an example of a binding that actually binds two different properties. It binds the title and the source attributes, and you can see that you just use a semicolon here. And let me include my flags now. I put them all locally because I didn't want to take any dependencies. Great. And so now I have a zoomed out list. It has an item template and an item data source. However, we want to style this just like we had styled our zoomed in list. And so let me go to my default CSS. And I'm going to add some CSS for the country list. And so I'm going to make it 100% height and width so that you can pan anywhere on the screen. Once again, this margin, so that I avoid the title, I align with the title on the left and on the right, and I save space for an app bar at the bottom. And I size my item, I add some background color, and I center my content. And so now when I run this, you can see we have a great looking zoomed out view. And so now I have a zoomed out view and a zoomed in view, and they both seem to work pretty great independently. And so now I can just enable them both and wrap them in a semantic zoom control. And there's some APIs that you have to implement for semantic zoom, but the list view has done that for you. And the important thing to remember when you're wrapping these in the semantic zoom is that the first element is going to be the zoomed in view, and the second element is going to be the zoomed out view. If you get that backwards, you'll probably notice right away, but it is important to make sure that you have it in the right order, because I've messed up a couple times. And then the last style that I'm going to add here to make the semantic zoom work is I'm going to also make sure that the semantic zoom control is 100% height and width, so that your users can pinch anywhere on the screen and they'll be able to zoom in and out. And so now if I run this, you can see that we have our list, our zoomed in list with our groups. And if I zoom out, you can see that we have the zoomed out view. And if I click on one, then all of a sudden we jump directly to that group. And we're back where we started. Awesome. So you saw how easy it was to do the grouping. The binding list had great APIs to create these group projections. They allow you to filter. They allow you to sort. They allow you to group. And so you can definitely make custom views over your data really quickly. As soon as you do groups, you're going to need the group header template. Whenever you're making a semantic zoom control, you're going to want to make first the zoomed in control, and then make the zoomed out control, and then put the two together to help with some debugging. Because if you try doing them both at the same time, you'll definitely hit some hiccups. Okay, so the last and final demo I'm going to do is adding some interactivity to the list view. And if you're noticing in the semantic zoom, when you pinch, the pinch gesture is all done by semantic zoom. But when you're tapping on an item, it's actually the list view that handles item invoke, and it fires the item invoke event. And then The semantic zoom is listening for the item invoke event, and then it allows you to zoom into that group. And so the list view has some configuration that you can turn on and off for each of your lists. So the first option is tap behavior, and this tells the list view what to do when someone taps. And you can have none, you can have invoke, which is the default, and lots of apps use it to zoom in on semantic zoom or navigate to a sub page, as in the store. And the other one is direct select and toggle select to change selection, and you can find that in the Mail app. The second thing that you can configure on the list view is selection mode, and you can either have selection on, as in single, or you can have it on so you can do bulk operations with selection mode multi, or you can have selection mode off with none. And then the final configuration that you're going to want to set when you're thinking about your list view is the swipe behavior, and this is none or it's select. And just to be clear, the swipe behavior is the same as right click, is the same as space bar, and the tap behavior is the same as left click, and is the same as enter. And so we already had the, so we already had the zoomed out view and the item invoke was already working, so we don't need to change our tap behavior there, but we don't want to enable people to rename their countries or delete a whole country, and so I'm going to actually disable the selection mode and the swipe behavior on the semantic zoom control, I mean on the zoomed out list view, and so this is how you do it. So you can just do it declaratively, just like you had set your item template and your item data source. You can set your selection mode and your swipe behavior, and there's MSDN documents for the namespaces, but they're exactly as they are here. But on the zoomed in view, I do want to allow some list edits, and I'm going to show you how great and easy it is to change your data source, because now it's a binding list, which is that great observable array. And so the first thing I'm going to do is, most of the time in Windows 8 apps, whenever you're going to like add something or remove something, we like to put a lot of our commands in the app bar. So I'm going to use an app bar to do this. And so let me just show you how we can add an app bar. The app bar, just like the list view, a lot of things can be declared declaratively in HTML. And so right here, I'm adding an app bar. And inside the app bar, I'm adding one app bar command called delete. And I added a label. I added an onClick. I added an extra class name. And I'm also disabling this command by default. And later on, when someone selects an item, I'm going to re-enable this command. And then if they remove selection, then I'm going to disable the command again. And so if you come back into the JavaScript, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to wire up the events. And these events are going to use some of the events that ListView provides. So ListView has a bunch of different events that you're going to want to use. The first one is item invoke, and that is how we zoomed in on the list on the semantic zoom, and it's how you navigate to subpages. And another one is called selection changed. There's another one called selection changing, and the Mail team actually uses that so you can't deselect the only item that you have selected. But selection changed is fired after the selection has been changed. And so you can see that what I'm doing here is I'm retrieving the delete command and I'm toggling the disabled state. So if there is some selection, I'm enabling the delete command and I'm also showing the app bar. Otherwise, I'm disabling the delete command. And so let me just call this up above. Okay, and then also, when they click on the delete command, now that it can be disabled and enabled, I had a delete handler that I set up in markup. And when someone presses on the delete command, we can retrieve the list view, and then we can use the rich selection APIs that we have in the list view to find out which items have selection. You can also, in your apps, you can also change selection. You can call select all. You can clear your selection. You can set it to be item 1, 4, and 5. But in this example, I'm just retrieving the items that are selected, and then using the binding list, I'm calling splice of the index of that item, and that's removing the item from the binding list, and that pushes into the filter projection, which is pushing into the group projection, which all the way pushes into the list, and then you have the animation when an item is deleted, and then I'm also hiding the app bar after you press delete. And so now if I go to demo this to you, you can see that when I right-click here, the app bar opened, the delete button is enabled. If I unselect it, it's disabled. If I select a different one, it's enabled again, and I can click on it, and you can see an animation. And so that's one of the things that ListView gives you are those rich animations. And so I can show you just delete two, and there you are. And so that's how you can add interactivity with the list view and change the different types of interaction modes it has. But sometimes you have an element inside the list view that you don't want the list view to interact with. So imagine if you have a text element or you have a rating control. When you tap in it, you want to put focus in it and allow the user to type something or pick a rating, and you really don't want to navigate to the second page or even show the pressed in animation. So to deal with that, we have a CSS class that you can or class name that you can put on the element called WinInteractive, and as soon as you do that, ListView on MS Pointer down will ignore that pointer. And also if that element has focus and you're using your arrow keys, we'll ignore the key presses when that has focus. And so let me show you that. And with this example, I'm going to actually show a bunch more ListView APIs. And I'm also going to give you some eye candy to really push the boundaries of what you can do inside your ListView items to kind of inspire you to add some to your own apps. So I'm going to add some more markup here inside of my people template. And so for each of my people, I already had their name and their gender, but now I'm putting a sibling element here that I just called photo, even though there's no photo here. And it has a background, it has their name again, and it has a ratings control. And the really interesting thing here, or the really important thing here, is that I have the WinInteractive class. And you can see that inside these binding templates, you can actually instantiate the ratings control, and you can bind up to properties of the ratings control, like average rating. I'm assigning it from the rating of the person. And so here now I have two types of content. I have the person's name and their gender, and then I also have the person's name and their rating. And I'm going to want to the animation I'm going to use here is the same as on the start screen. So they have this peak animation where the content peaks up, and I'm going to do the same thing. And so I'm only going to show one at a time, so I need to be able to move these two elements independently. And so if I come over to my CSS, I'm going to add some CSS to do this. And so what I'm first doing is I'm setting position absolute on the two elements, and this is going to allow me to move them independently. And I'm going to start the photo div, the new content that I have, 100% with top 100%. That means it's right off of the screen. And then my three locations that I'm going to do so that I can move them up and down are top 100%, top 0, and top negative 100%. And then I can move them independently and make sure that I get my animations done. And then I'm also going to center my content, and I'm giving the ratings control some colors so you can see them on my backgrounds. And then the final thing that I'm going to add is some JavaScript to make all this run. And all of this is not super necessary to look at. It's a lot of it. I added a lot of code here. But essentially, I have an array of the items opening, closing, the ones open. I have some math. I have some logic to make sure that I don't open up too many items or close too many items. And I'm randomly picking items to open and close, or to peek open and peek close. And the important APIs that I want to outline here are that ListView has APIs like index of first visible, index of last visible, current item. And these APIs are great for many different things. For example, I'm using them to animate items that are on the screen only, because I don't want to be spending time animating all these items off the screen. But also, when you suspend your app, when you come back, you want to be looking at the same section of your list. And so the current item and ensure visible is a great way to do that. Also, if you like navigate into a page and then the user clicks on back to come back to the list, once again, you want to like let them end up exactly where they were in the list. And so those are some great APIs. Another API that I'm using is element from index. And this allows us to get the win item, the item that you created in your item template, back so they can modify it. And so in here, I'm actually changing styles on it. I'm finding the two inner divs, and I'm changing the top from 100 and a 0 and a negative 100. And then the last thing I want to show you in this JavaScript is the animation library. So in WinJS, we have a really large animation library called WinJS UI Animation. And we have a lot of the animations like show or fade in and fade out, and create peaked animation is the one I'm using. And when I use the create peaked one, I pick the location where I want the items to start initially. Then I say create peaked, and it remembers where those items are. I set them to their final location, so I update the top of the two elements. And then I say execute. And when I execute the items, that's where our animation picks the correct duration. It uses the right timing curve, so it fits in with the rest of the Windows 8 personality. And so now when I run this, you should see that we have some items peaking. And so the interesting thing here is that I can click on these items, and I'm not doing the item invoke. Although this is a bad UI, because who wants to be clicking on things that are moving? I don't know. But that was just to illustrate the point. Awesome. Great. Awesome. So I showed you that you should specify, or at least determine, which tap behavior, which swipe behavior, and what selection mode you want to use. Our defaults are tap behavior is invoke, selection mode is multi, and swipe behavior is select. You're going to want to interact with your app bar, and you're going to want, when someone selects items, you're going to want to listen to the selection and enable or show your commands. And when people click on the commands, you're going to want to go and modify your binding list so that the list view gets the update. And then you're going to want to use the WinInteractive class on your items so that you can have interactive elements inside of your ListView items. And then I also want to tell you that the FlipView control, inside WinJS library, there's a FlipView control. And it uses the same item data source. It uses the same item template. And also uses the same WinInteractive class name. So if you're putting interactive elements inside your FlipView, use the same technique. If you want to switch your list over to be a flip view that people can flip one item at a time through, that's great. You can use the same data source. You can even still use the same templates. And actually, a lot of the class names that we chose are the same in between the list view and the flip view. So if you're trying to figure out what should you size, well, the win item is in both of the controls. And so there's a lot of similarities in between the two controls. And so in this talk, I showed you how to create a list view. I showed you how to add a data source to it, an item template to it, put some CSS. It wasn't too much work, I think that we can all agree. I showed you how to group up your items with the binding projections and how to add the zoomed in and the zoomed out list view together and create the semantic zoom control. And I showed you how to push the boundaries of the list view by adding interactivity, by clicking on, by swiping, modifying your list, and by adding interactive elements inside of your list view. I can't wait to see what apps you guys make. After the Q&A, I'm going to be across the hall, and I hope that you guys fill out some session evals. And so now I'm ready for questions. Sure.
Documentation, I think, says it's not possible, but how might I go about creating a grouped vertical scrolling list view?
It is not currently possible. Correct.
I'm imagining like the Netflix app where you go through, you have that, you have like the A through Z on top.
A through Z on top, and then what? And then you like click on it.
Yeah, kind of like.
Fast. You want it to like change the scroll position to go to that item.
Yes.
Right now we have the like, you can use your index of elements and stuff, and you can change, like, you can say, like, switch this to be the first index of visible, item number 52. We don't have an animation to take you to there, but you might be able to use some MS transforms and transitions to achieve that. Actually, the MS doesn't need it anymore. The transforms and transitions, okay. The standards, right? Anything else? Yep. Yeah, so on the store, they use a feature called cell spanning, and it's only available on the horizontal grid layout currently, unless you make your own custom layout. But they're off of it. Actually, let me switch over to it. I can actually show you. I used to have it in my demo, but then I was going to run out of time. So. So in... In your Zoom, I was going to add it to my zoomed out list. And oops. In here, there is a on the list view. You can specify a layout and declaratively like this, or you can just do it in JavaScript. All these properties you can set in JavaScript. But if you set it here, you can pass in an API called group info. And if you look over here. I can show you what a group info function looks like. And a group info function returns an object that has enable cell spanning, true and false, and you pick your cell width and height. And the really important thing when you're thinking about your cell width and height is you're going to want to pick a size, and then it's not arbitrary sizes. The list view doesn't support arbitrary sizes. It really does cell spanning. And so you're going to pick one size like 160 by 90, I think is my example. And then when you're picking the one that it's 2 by 1, you're going to actually include the margins in your CSS. So then what I do on my templates... in my templates up here, in my content here, not that. Here I use a binding, and I actually like choose which class name I'm going to use so that in my CSS I can define, oh, here's my 1x1, here's my 2x2, here's my 1x, you know, like, and then you have to make sure that you're really using a lot of 1x1s, otherwise you're going to end up with a bunch of holes throughout your list. And that there's also an API called item info, and this makes it so that we don't have to measure each item. So it's a really great perf optimization. If you're like normally when you're using a list view, we measure the first item and then we know every item is the same size, but with the enable cell spanning, we don't know each size. And so we have a function where we pass an index to you and then you can return an object with a width and a height. And all of that's on MSDN. I think it's in the sample for optimizing list views, but it should be. Anything else? Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned the whole measure the first one and assume everything else is the same. I actually thought that was a bug, because if I have text and I say at most it could be 2 or 3 lines, and the first item is shorter than the second one, it messes up the heights. Is there a way to say I don't want that and I want you to measure every one?
Not right now. I mean, the list view supports left to right and right to left. Like, if I had my machine set to Arabic, then the list view would have automatically started on the right side, I believe.
Okay.
Right. If that's what you meant.
I was thinking if I wanted to change, without changing the operating system default like language, if I wanted to redo it as though it were in Arabic.
I think when you're doing, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'll have to look it up. there's some APIs when you're localizing your content that I know you can like provide it a fake language that you're debugging in, and I don't know if that's what you should be using or not in that case, but I don't know. I'd have to look into that. Anything else? All right, great. Thanks for coming, guys.